And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are always glad that you could be with us. I want to do a shout out to the workgroup and our co-chairs for getting us to this point and getting ready to finalize our recommendations on draft US CDI version 3. We really appreciate all the hard work that you've all put into this. As a reminder, your feedback is welcomed throughout our call today, which can be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting, or could be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:55 Eastern time this morning. So I'll begin roll call with our work group members. So when I call your name, please indicate that you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Brian Malik.
Good morning.
Kelly Aldrich. Hans Bootendijk is not able to be with us today. Thomas Cantalina or Jeff Ford?
Hey, this is Jeff Ford.
Thank you. Christina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Lee Weidner.
Good morning.
Sanjeev Tandon.
Good morning.
Raj Gobarty.
Good morning.
Jim Jurgis. And Kalamoto. Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu.
Good morning.
David McCauley.
Good morning.
Glenn McDonald. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber. Abby Sears.
Good morning.
And Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Great. Thank you so much, everybody. And now please join me in welcoming Stephen and Arian for their opening remarks.
Let's get to it. I think we've got a nice draft ready for the workgroup's consideration. We took all of the workgroup deliberations that had been memorialized already as recommendations, took a few others that we discussed, and drafted them as recommendations. And then Al very nicely put them together in the official recommendations letter format. So from this point forward, for the material that we're presenting at the actual HITECH, the recommendations letter is the format we're working off, rather than the Google Docs. If we have time after reviewing the work group report out or recommendations, then we'll take forward our ISA portion of the task force and review our charge and start thinking about testimony, deliberation, et cetera, there. So that's generally how I think we are going to proceed today. As Mike noted, it's taken a lot of work to get here, and really appreciate the work group's time, energy, and attention. Sometimes when we're in the thick of the deliberations, it feels like we're not going to get, we're only going to recommend a few things. And I think we've got a good, healthy set of recommendations for V3 that's reflected the input and deliberation of this group. Mark, you look very snazzy today. Stephen, anything more you want to add?
No, I would have introduced it the same way had I gotten myself off mute fast enough. So again, thank you everyone for your time. Do want to always remind members of the public that you are welcome to join us in the chat. I know that this was that Mike mentioned this, but there are quite a number of members of the public who are here. So join us as we discuss things, as well as take advantage of the opportunity for public comment at the end. As you can see in the agenda, we want to take feedback regarding the draft recommendations report that has been prepared and distributed. I think there was one item that we still had some open questions about because our recollections of the discussion was a little different, specifically having to do with average blood pressure. So we want to come back to that one. And then we do want to shift our focus as soon as we can, really, as soon as we're done with receiving your feedback on the draft report, we want to switch to the phase two work to get us oriented to that so that we can really dive into that in earnest next week. Al, did you have anything you wanted to add before we jumped in? If not, that's fine. I do want to give.
Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
It took me just like you. It took a minute to get off of mutes, Earl. Not for this part. We're going to talk. I think I'm going to have some remarks as we begin the phase two portion of the agenda. But I have just as a, I have both the letter and the editable spreadsheet in case we need to reference that.
Wonderful.
Available.
Great.
It seems like pulling up the letter makes sense at this point. I think we should pull that up.
I have them both available. I'll put the spreadsheet. I'll put the letter up. Excuse me. The last letter that went out.
It feels like the suggestion, Stephen, that you made about having a little blanket recommendation would be helpful to discuss as a full work group, as well as the recommendation on average blood pressure. Just make sure that we actually reflected, or that we have, you know, you and I have different recollections of the work group's deliberations. So just make sure that we get that correctly. And then I'm sure that other folks have read the recommendations and may have some edits or wonder where X went or wonder where Y went.
Exactly. So the first comment that Arian made, a suggestion that I made actually after this was distributed to all of you, was that we include at the top here a statement that we reviewed, that the work group reviewed all of the recommendations from ONC for new items to include in draft in V3, and that we support them across the board with the following modifications, which are simply intended to make them more understandable and to support the logic and structure of the USCDI in response to the input of our stakeholders. So
Stephen, would that be a bullet under the recommendations or under the intro?
I think, frankly, I see it as sort of an intro to the subsection called New Data Classes and Elements, because what we're saying is that we support all of the new data classes and elements that ONC proposed, that there were none. Because one of our charges was to see, was there anything in there that wasn't, that we felt was not ready, that we wanted to remove or suggest the removal. And I don't think we had any of those. We suggested some resorting, you know, keeping, you know, elements in its original class and renaming of certain classes and elements. But in my understanding of all of our discussions to date is that there were none of the proposed new data elements or classes that we were suggesting not including.
Yeah, and I think that's, so we had extensive discussion about medications. I think we've got that already in there. The only person that who's unfortunately not available today who might have some alarm at that statement would be Hans, because he's done the analysis with HL7 and FHIR about elements that are not yet ready. So that would be the one check.
That is a good point. It's probably also worth including an acknowledgement to that effect in this intro to the subsection, to say that the work group is aware that some of what has been proposed may be a challenge for HL7 to ready all of the appropriate implementation guidance that we continue to believe is required in order for something to move forward into a new version. I don't think we got down into the level of detail of that discussion since it started a little late in our process to be able to say specifically, you know, this one here, you know, we understand it's going to be really hard. And if you can't do it, we get it. I think just acknowledging that that reality and knowing that ONC and HL7 have a process that they're going to go through to assure that HL7 is ready to support all of this. There's a question in the chat from Matt, whether the document is available for public view. And I think specifically, actually, Al, why don't you comment on that or respond?
At this time, it is not available for public review because it's still part of the deliberations of the work group, which then have to be forwarded to and presented to the HITAC. Once it's presented to the HITAC, it will be a part of the public record.
Yeah, once it's draft. Yeah, that's right.
It'll be posted on the HITAC
website
probably by the end of this week.
Yeah, as meeting materials.
Yeah,
exactly. Welcome, Kelly. There was another question from Ike, some wordsmithing suggestions. And spelling errors, so thank you for that. I'll let Al read those. All right, and then, so I think we might as well, Arian, jump to
the- We're not gonna give Al a hard time for typing furiously during the meeting itself.
No. And rest assured
Why
that we'll-
Why could today be any different?
Yeah, exactly.
rest assured, we'll go through this again with a fine tooth comb for spelling and language.
Why don't we go down to the blood pressure recommendation. So as a reminder, both the AHA and the AMA, the AHA, not the Hospital Association, but the Heart Association, put together public comment into the work group that suggested the addition of the calculated average of systolic and diastolic blood pressure.
No, of multiple measurements of systolic.
I'm trying to be precise, and I messed it up in being precise. So the calculated average value of the diastolic and the systolic calculated across multiple readings, with some recommendations for how those readings are to be taken to address measurement error in blood pressure readings. And I believe when we discussed this, we discussed that our recommendation was for ONC to work with LOINC to better assess how that should be captured, whether that would be a new set of LOINC codes for the systolic and the diastolic, or whether that would be a modifier, an observation modifier, that notes that the systolic and the diastolic respectively are the average of multiple values. So I think the sense is we support the sense of the medical societies in that this is an important clinical value that should be available for interoperability. And then we've got, we think there's more work to be done to figure out the appropriate representation.
And I think the other point that came up in our discussion was that there are other vital signs that where ONC has been compelled to accept calculated values, such as certain ratios within the pediatric vital signs, But that in general, there's a sense that that calculation can be done by a given system, whether or not it's defined as a specific data element. I also observe, you know, as a patient who measures my blood pressure at home, if you could see it, I tried to put my blood pressure cuff on my desk behind me here. I have a machine which generates an average of three measurements, and that's sort of the only number that it shows me. And I could imagine, you know, systems being able to receive that. I could also imagine that, you know, if you've got a dermatology system or an ICU system that doesn't really care about averages of multiple blood pressures, that they could just receive it as a blood pressure and probably make an external blood pressure and make full use of it. But be that as it may, I think, Arian, your point that even though this seems like it could be a desirable thing for some systems, the question of exactly how it's defined, it has not been clarified, I think, as far as we understand. Even though it was accepted by ONC as a level two item. So I think, Arian, your suggestion on the table is that we would encourage ONC to work with LOINC and stakeholders to get a clear definition and then perhaps bring it back next year. So we've got a couple of hands up.
Or add it, but let's mm-hmm. make sure that when we talk about adding it, we know what we're recommending to add. We're not necessarily recommending to add the literal data element. Clem has his hand up.
Yeah, I think the calculated issue is really not relevant, you know, whether we make it a data or not. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff that's calculated either behind the scenes. BMI is a classic example. And because it's calculated, it doesn't mean you have to necessarily send it that way. I mean, so, but I've talked, Corey Smith is one of the I think AMAHA person who I've just communicated with, but not close. They actually have already requested a term back in the fall, a set of N different repeats of the pressures. I almost think, but you know, we keep dropping. What they actually say is this is for, oops, sorry about that. Barb, I don't know what to do.
While Clem is coming back. Sorry, I was just going to respond to Kelly's point. Yeah, this is not mean arterial pressure.
Yeah, this is not mean arterial pressure. We should be clear about that. Why don't we move to Ike while Clem's working on the
dog
canine wrangling?
Oh, Clem, you're back. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the real issue is everybody keeps dropping it. They said this is for ambulatory visit, and if the first pressure is high, then repeat some more. So it's pretty well defined. And the question is whether one should make a general term that has multiple blood pressures and have a protocol, but I don't know if there are any other recommended protocols. So whether that's important, rather than just have a panel that says, this is this, you know, pressure, average blood pressure, and do it when you have a first blood pressure is high. That's, I think, the whole theory is because you get less, you'll get more accurate measures when you have an extreme value at the beginning.
Yeah. Ike?
Two things real fast. I know we just want to clarify that we're doing systolic and diastolic separately, which we all know to be true, but we just make sure that the notes reflect that so there's absolute clarity.
They are proposing that. Three separate measures of both.
Right. I know that. I was in the language earlier, there was some, it could have been interpreted that you were averaging the systolic and diastolic, and that's not obviously what we want to do.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Yeah, and Al, perhaps you can clarify that in the text in the document we're displaying.
So that's because we have separate data elements for systolic and diastolic blood pressure. The proposal, the question is not the statement, but the question to the work group is this a recommendation for the existing systolic blood pressure and the existing diastolic blood pressure plus the average systolic blood pressure and the average diastolic blood pressure.
And that's
a question that can be clarified in the recommendation. Yeah,
that's right. And I think, Al, what the work group's saying is that we agree, we have no reason to disagree with the AMA and the AHA, that interoperability of computed mean systolic and computed mean diastolic would be a helpful helpful to improve the quality of blood pressure care for Americans. What we don't know is what we also believe, based on our deliberation, is that ONC should work with LOINC and other stakeholders to establish the correct coding and data representation, whether, again, as we've talked about, whether that should be a collection of underlying data elements where the computation can be made on the fly, or whether there is a modifier or specific LOINC code that represents that this is a computed value. I think we generally support the inclusion for the purposes of interoperability. We don't know at this time what the right representation is, and we're recommending that ONC work with LOINC and other bodies to figure out the representational issues.
Ariane, I think we could do that overnight if that's what you're on, but there is no option for a modifier in any of these contexts. What you either do is you make up you put an extra term in, let's say by what protocol in the panel, or you have a panel that says what it is. And that's something, I guess.
They
just have a panel with multiple blood pressures and have another variable that says this is the AHA protocol. But I don't know if there's many protocols that you need to get that extra.
But it needs to be spelled out. We're not going to do it between now.
We're not going to do it now. We're not going to do it as a work.
Right.
Yeah. This is Stephen. It's just round out my thought earlier is there really a need to share whether the blood pressures were taken multiple times or not? And what are all the and laid on top of that another layer about why it was taken multiple times? In other words, did I just get a really bad measure in the first time? And do I have, because the blood pressure cuff was not attached properly? Well, yeah, I'm getting an odd number there, but does that count as one of multiple attempts to take blood pressure or not? So are we better off looking at the clinical practice that says, yes, you should take multiple valid blood pressures and report the single number and leave it to on the clinical side as to how many iterations it may take to get there, or value in communicating that there were multiple iterations?
And I think again, just the sense of the work group is we don't know what the right answer is. We support the medical societies in including this element for interoperability, but we think there's representational issues that ONC should sort out with LOINC and other stakeholders.
Agree. And I think we can leave it at that. I do want to go to the comment about clinical notes from Grace, just below this, looking for some clarity. There, I think Grace is reminding us that we did have a discussion about tumor board notes in particular. And I guess the question is whether that should be called out as a specific recommendation in the same way that we have called out surgical operative notes. I must say it's interesting, Grace, in that in my organization, there's been a parallel conversation about tumor board notes and folks on tumor boards feeling that those are actually the sort of note that are going to be particularly challenging to make available to patients unexplained because sometimes the tumor board meets even before options are presented to the patient. So it's kind of like the unanticipated abnormal imaging result. It's like the patient may not even know that all of this is going on yet. And of course, one could argue, either way about whether that's a good thing or not and how much of that is paternalism. But I think that if we choose to call out tumor board notes, it's a pretty big deal. Whereas I think surgical operative notes, not so contentious.
Stephen, I can appreciate the concerns, but from the patient and care partner perspective, there's no transparency or documentation that is shared. So what happens is a phone call is given to a patient, a possible virtual meeting, and they're told recommendations, and we cannot follow up or ask any questions. And then we're supposed to go to a local community oncologist that we're seeing to relay the information. There's no documentation, and it's quite tragic and unfair to not have these rich, robust conversations recorded and shared with the patient. And I did post a link. I'm not sure if that's the appropriate LOINC code, but there is information there. So I would appreciate if the work group would really consider encouraging this.
Thank you. And you know, my understanding would be that it would be part of the, it's not specifically excluded from the designated record set. It's unless it's anonymized, it's PHI that's used for the care of the patient. Well, it is, it's never going to be anonymized because it's always got to be mapped back to the care of the patient. And so it should form part of the designated record set.
And looking at that link, that looks like the right one, Grace, that you found. So Clem, your hands up.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to comment on that one too, that I guess you already said it. There's already a code for that. And I think it's included. I think you've described that all the notes, LOINC is the record set for it. So it's kind of covered. I mean, I don't know if it matters much if you call it out because it should be there by the broader definition. But I think that's more up to the patient advocates. If they really, really want it, you know, it's them that we're talking about. So I wouldn't mind calling out either.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's included there in our overall recommendation. If it is captured, it will be represented as a LOINC code and will be available for interoperability.
Al, can you go to the top of page, whatever it is, 8, I think, because the way we phrased it is we have, as we've said, the general recommendation, which we had last year, that any LOINC coded note should, you know, you should be able to receive the LOINC code along with the note and then have the notes be, you know, findable using that. But then we do call out surgical operative notes independently. So I think what Grace is proposing that in that last sub-bullet that we call out, that this recommendation includes both surgical operative notes and tumor board notes, and if you don't follow the recommendation above, please at least include these. So I think that's the request here. Does anyone object to that addition?
Just from a process perspective, and I'm looking it up in the background, was it in level 1 or level 2?
It's, remember, all they didn't level individual note types, right? In version 2, they added clinical notes and they called out a few specific ones. So what we're saying, either version 3 should be updated to identify all note types that are captured, or your short list should be extended by at least this much. So any objections to the addition as noted?
Well, Steve, I don't object at all, but I think that the way that those two things are proposed, it sounds like they could choose not to send notes with a code if they did those two. Is that what you mean?
Well, the way it is now, and David, I think you've got it right in your comment. The way it is now is it says you must share this short list of note types. And a lot of organizations, my own included, you know, went through all of the note types in the EHR and said, which ones map to the short list that needs to be shared, and let's make sure we share those. But then that's how they went about interpreting information sharing requirements. Now, we all appreciate that when, you know, later this year, USCDI no longer becomes the scope of information sharing requirements. So in a certain sense, these notes will by definition be available with the shift in October. Having said that, I think we have identified again the surgical note as particularly valuable to patients, and Grace is arguing that this is sort of another one that is of particular value and should be called out. And I think by calling it out and listing it in USCDI, if they don't take our first recommendation, it does really assure that short list it's still short, it's still single digits, right? And one could expect that certified EHRs would test against all of those specific note types. Al?
I wanted to just clarify a point that you just made, Stephen, or maybe correct it. There's a difference between the requirement. There's a difference between the scope of information blocking being USCDI and once USCDI is no longer the limits of information blocking, that means that that information would have to be exchanged in whatever format available to fulfill the requirements for information blocking or to avoid the penalties therefrom. It does not say that, but once outside of the scope of information blocking, the addition of a particular clinical note would have the effect of requiring EHRs to be able to identify and exchange, clinical note of that type or that tag. So it's not that it wouldn't mean that all clinical note types would be required to be captured. It just means that anything that's captured would have to be exchanged to avoid information blocking, if that makes sense.
It does. Thanks for the clarification. And to David's question, again, I think if ONC took our first recommendation, then the second recommendation isn't really necessary. All right, any concerns about this as Al has represented it in the draft?
Mark, right now we're treating the document as the standard. So we already did the reconciliation back to the spreadsheet. We're not going to backwards port the comments we're doing here back to the spreadsheet. So if you're looking for something,
thank you. It's the other way around. There are things that were in the spreadsheet that I'm not seeing in the letter, and I'm not trying to jump into any process, but I'm mindful that we've got an hour left and wondering what you want.
So that's the process. Yeah. So we've translated it from spreadsheet to letter, and the letter is what's going to move forward. And along with an accompanying slide deck. So if there's something that stands out to you that we missed in the translation, this is the time.
Okay. So wherever you'd like to put me in the queue, I do have some items. Thank you.
Go ahead. Go ahead. You got the mic.
Okay. Sorry if I'm barging in. First one is on recommendation 6, pregnancy status. And I may have missed this at the very beginning, but when we talked about it, we talked about saying sort of explicitly, we do recommend adding pregnancy status as a data element. That was on the spreadsheet. It didn't seem to be explicit.
That was the purpose of my certainly implied. That was the purpose of my original comment that we should start this section saying we support all of it.
Moving to recommendation 9 on disability status. It's actually I believe it's the ICF functioning query. Somebody may have had a reason for putting it here, but query whether it should be connected to disability status recommendation number 23. It sort of stands out here. I'm just seeing this now, so there may be a perfect explanation. It wasn't immediately occurring to me.
Just as a guide, the way this letter is structured is that it takes the new elements. And so it takes the data elements that were in draft V3, and then it goes towards the recommended ads. And depending on, in some cases, that has the effect of splitting logically related items across multiple sections. So there's a couple of sections, a few sections.
But I think, Mark, your suggestion is good, that since this really did come up in the context of our discussion of health status and disability, that it would make sense to make this a sub piece of the broader recommendation for that data class.
Before we shift,
I want to make sure that Al is capturing that. And maybe you could just do a quick sloppy cut and paste, and then we can clean it up later.
We're cutting from to where?
So taking what is now 9 and making that a part of, what is the other one, Mark?
23.
No, 23 is gender harmony.
Then I miswrote disability.
It's 25.
Okay.
yeah, it would be a part of 25, which is already a very long recommendation.
Correct.
Could I just yes. make a comment that's not as supportive? So ICF is a vector. You have four different variables. It doesn't fit into FHIR. I mean, if FHIR looks for answers, you know, and it's not an observation in the definition of FHIR. And some have told me from the disability area that it's the upper level is great. Trying to flesh out all the lower levels is hard. So I just think we have to be careful.
So I think what we intended in our language, and perhaps we can refine it somewhat, Clem, in response to that observation, is that ONC explore naming ICF as a useful tool in the documentation of disability because it is broadly used. The fact that it has not gotten on the FHIR train, if you will, is probably relevant, but I think our goal is to recommend that ONC consider, and that's how we phrased it, consider okay. using a value that's, set based on the ICF.
That's fair enough. I retract my comment.
So second comment on recommendation
hold on, wait,
nine,
Al,
whenever
wait.
That's appropriate. Okay.
Yeah, hold tight. Al, get us reoriented here.
Just real quick, since the recommendation 20, I think it's 23, just correct me if I'm wrong, but we're looking at 23. That specifically is the support.
No, it's not 23. No, it's 25. 25 is the long recommendation regarding.
I'm looking at the wrong version of this.
Maybe I am. I'm sorry. It's possible that I'm looking at the wrong version.
23, the one that I've got was the last email that we sent around.
Okay, sorry.
That's what I was working off.
Okay, all is correct. I'll close right. the one I was looking
23
at.
Mark. So because this is about, this is part of, so this. Now that I look at this, this recommendation looks like the first section recommendation. And so I would recommend moving
23
recommendation
up, right?
23 up instead yeah. of the other way around.
That's yeah. perfectly okay. fair.
Let me work on that. Hang on a second. Right.
But don't renumber everything else so that everyone can work off of the version that they have in their hands.
I'm not rearranging the numbers yet. I haven't automated it that much.
And I'm pulling up the right version, so that's good.
And I think it's good. It also puts this ICF model in its proper context, because it really is a we don't know, but ONC might want to consider it, as opposed to we support, we recommend, which is what the rest of these recommendations are actually saying.
Something for us to look at is that there's a little bit of a disconnect between adopting the broad ICF model and adopting a list of specific data elements or sorry terms. I just throw that out there as a thought.
Yep. No. And again, I think the way that I would state the work group's recommendations in this area is that 23 are the work group's recommendations, and the ICF comment is a comment to ONC that ONC might look at the ICF in addition
and see where it fits.
I don't believe that the work group took such a you know, I think we heard good testimony about the ICF as a decent model, and we're passing that recommendation or that testimony on to ONC for deliberation. But I don't believe it's the sense of the work group that we thought that ICF is the be all and end all for functional status and disability status.
And yet we appreciate that there are a number of stakeholders that are utilizing it to good purpose.
Exactly.
All right, Mark, where do you want to go next?
Recommendation nine says, okay. So on what was a recommendation nine, the very last bullet, says the ICF can be used to describe both functioning and disability. We had a specific recommendation around disability status that came from our subject matter experts. So I think ICF is not really about disability.
I don't think we need this sub-bullet, frankly. I don't think it adds tremendous value. Fine. So we can strike that last sentence.
Which sub-bullet, please?
The ICF can be used to describe down right there. Yeah. We may be overreaching there.
I think it's the both word is the key word there. The word both is the important part of that bullet. Not the whole bullet.
Mark,
your suggestion was fine. I think if you take out disability and just say to describe functional status, that makes sense. But it is just a recommendation to ONC anyway.
Yeah, I think it's easier to leave it out. It just will avoid confusion.
I mean, the name of the model itself explains that it includes functioning, disability, and health. So that's sort of self-defining.
Yeah.
This is Steve. Just a pure technical question. Is there a different acronym? Because ICF in government and public health often means something other than what we're using it for here.
I think that's what this thing was called. That's what we heard.
It is. It's the common abbreviation. And it's.
Okay. Yeah. Just to differentiate it from care facilities, because that's often what ICFs are in public health and state government kind of stuff. So just
inpatient care or inpatient rehab?
Rehab. But again,
there's an IRF. Yeah. There's an IRF.
It does not make a huge difference, but just trying to avoid confusion.
Carmela put in a nice link to a document that the CDC has posted about this. So CDC is well aware. All right, Mark, where did you want to go next?
Going up to what was 23 and probably still has that number on it, but it's immediately mm-hmm. above where we're looking right now. So to the third bullet point, we made a separate recommendation about defining disability status data element. It's now combined with in a sentence that says recommending to work with stakeholders to specify value sets. I think we should be breaking that bullet point up and remain specific about disability status, which was what our experts recommended to us as those seven self-reported questions.
Oh yeah, got it. So we don't formally say we support the inclusion of disability status.
I think that's up at the header, Darian.
It doesn't say we support the inclusion of, it now says we recommend the following changes or definitions for.
But again, we now have a note at the top of this whole section saying we support the inclusion of everything that was recommended in draft V3.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. And so all you're suggesting is this edit what you were looking for, Mark?
I think so, because we did talk about working with stakeholders on some of the value sets for cognitive mental status and functional status. So I think this tracks what was in the worksheet. Okay, cool. I know we're working out this document now. So let me see what was next on my...
Al, my comment to the right there, that we spell out the seven questions either in this document or via a link, but at the very least include that in the presentation to high tech so that they know what we're talking about.
I think a link would be appropriate.
So to your question, Stephen, next item, I think, is the very bottom of this recommendation. When Al's ready. There is the addition of a functional capacity evaluation under disability. I'm not sure if that's a typo, but that's not what I don't think we talked about that. We talked about the seven questions.
Sorry, this came from Holly and Terry.
This was part of their specific part of their recommendation.
Their recommended value set. And here we're not, again, I just want to be precise because I think Holly and Terry did fantastic fantastic work. Here we are not making recommendations that ONC literally include all of these value, all of these codes in a value set. We're saying, here are some codes for a prospective value set that you might want to consider.
And I think that we could address this, your concern, Mark, by simply moving that functional capacity evaluation up as an item in the list just above it, which now mm-hmm. has 13 items and okay. makes us a 14th.
Yeah. Okay, so
those items above are in different categories than...
No, I understand, but that's the list of 13 is under functional status.
Under functional status.
So, and the functional capacity evaluation certainly sounds to me like it has to do with functional status. So I would just move that one up as 14 in the list above. And then we could probably lose both of those bullets. This one that says disability status. Or wait, do we still need that? May consider the following. Yes, I think we could get rid of the whole disability status and expand items if we just move that one up.
Like this?
Like that, exactly. Exactly so, thank you. Okay, Mark, I want to remind everyone that Mark is an accomplished attorney who's been at this for a long time. So he knows from fixing documents before they go out the door.
Recommendation 22, which was gender identity. One specific item there. And so keep going, please, Joan. It was what we talked about as a work group and was in the worksheet was that on that bullet at the top of the page, this page, was that recommended sex or gender and sex for clinical use might be clinical values derived through clinical assessment and therefore consistent capturing the source and the method. I'm not sure why.
I broke this one out. And recorded sex or gender is a clinical value that is derived through clinical assessment or legal documentary status. And sex for clinical yep. use is context dependent, should not be interpreted as a singular assessment. That was clarification that I made. The way that it read felt to me to not distinguish the notion that sex for clinical use is not a value. It is something that is context sensitive, content specific. And representing a biological fact, not a legal documentary fact. So intended as a biological fact that is relevant for the procedure or activity or assessment that's being performed only in the context of that assessment.
I think the contextual statements in the last bullet point are great, but I would just copy that we want to also track source and method for sex for clinical use.
Got it.
That's my primary focus.
Got it.
That apply to both.
Yep. So we additionally recommend including, I'm not sure that, yeah, anyway.
It might not be individual self-report, but just identifying the source and the method.
Yeah, or we can pull this, we can pull that clause out, Al, into a separate paragraph.
From where? I'm sorry, I'm not seeing it.
So we can pull out, therefore, consistent with, we can say, we recommend for both reported sex and gender and sex for clinical use, we recommend consistent with other
yep.
data elements or recommendations, identifying the source.
Last item on the ones that I've
heard the English grammar sentence. Yeah.
Last item on the ones I just did a quick hunt on, but at the beginning of this meeting, I didn't see anything on the health insurance information topic. I may have missed it. I was just searching for keywords, so it may be there, but because I didn't read the entire letter. I searched for the word coverage type, because that definitely should be listed as a data class. I couldn't find coverage type. Is it accidentally dropped from the letter?
Was it part of our final, one of our final recommendations?
Yes.
It was, yeah.
Why isn't that not? I think I know why I didn't put it in there, because it doesn't seem to be on the final spreadsheet.
It might have gotten inadvertently deleted. I
mean, I'm looking, unless someone can point to it on the worksheet. If it's, I don't even see the word coverage or insurance in the spreadsheet, period. I don't understand that.
It'd be hard to delete a whole row.
Should be in the data element list. Google is still opening it for me. Here we go.
So I'm looking entry 19. I think I'm in, I don't know if I'm in the one you're in. Yes, it says last edit was made. So entry 19 is the one where we have the recommendation to include.
Yes,
row
there
20,
it is.
Entry 19.
Vegas Life.
I could have sworn I put that in there somewhere in some version.
It may be. I'm sorry. I did a search. I couldn't find it. I just wanted to raise that.
I'm saying that I think that I put that in there, but I'll make sure. Well, hold on. Give me a second.
Yeah. I'm doing the same search that Mark did and not seeing it.
I've got to go look at my older versions of this. So let's see, this is part of the first group of recommendations. I don't see it either, but we'll make it happen.
Why don't we just make sure we do a second pass just to make sure that everything that was a formal recommendation in the spreadsheet did end up in the, just useful as a secondary check.
Yeah, for sure.
Stephen and Arian, thanks. That's it for me for the ones that I was quickly trying to spot. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mark. Clem wanted to discuss specimen type. Which recommendation is that, Clem, in the document that was distributed? Clem, you're on mute.
Yeah, it's the one ISWG 2022 phase one, recommendation 10.
10, okay.
Yeah,
good.
I just want to clarify that because currently, and I sent in the chat the actual URL, currently HL7 recommends an HL7 specific code set. Now, I just think this is fine as long as it's clear that it doesn't replace it, because everyone's using, lots of places are using the existing code set happily.
Yeah, the wording specifically says as an applicable vocabulary standard. I think that was certainly the substance of our discussion.
Well,
was that this could
worry,
also be,
in addition to, I'd say, in addition to the current HL7 data set.
That seems
which HL7? So specimen type is typically codified by SNOMED, according to LIVID.
Say again.
Specimen type, according to LIVID, the LIVID file format, uses SNOMED.
Yeah, but
not HL7. HL7 generally will reference, sometimes reference. So I don't know which HL7, if it's HL7 Fire V3.
Well, I included in the chat the actual URL to the site. And this has been used, I think, in V2 and in V3 for decades. So I think if it's considered a replacement, there should be some discussion with laboratories along the way. I mean, I think it's fine and livid, but this doesn't mean it can't be used for the other things. That's what I'm afraid this suggests, and it'll be very disruptive.
Yeah, so Clem, you found it in version 3.1.0. I found it in 2.8. And HL7 clearly has specimen type defined in its various versions. So yes, this would be in addition to.
It's initially ONC did not identify that particular specimen type value set as the standard. Rather, we were instead referencing the way that the LIVID, the lab in vitro diagnostic process defines specimen type. And there may be some correlation.
I think it's fine, but I think if it replaces this other one, you're going to create a world of woe for a long time.
Yeah, I don't think it was meant to be a replacement. And you said it wasn't in FHIR, but I see a FHIR page here.
I didn't mean to say, I just meant to say it's widely used in HL7.
But you're comfortable with the terminology as an applicable data set. So Al, I think rather than specifically pointing to the HL7 3.1.0, we might just be more broad. Okay, fine. And then there was a V2 version I put in there also. So
what USCDI typically does is kind of lowest common denominator, especially when there's a discrepancy between the FHIR and the FHIR V2, V3, CCDA value sets. We will look for a common ground. And if that happens to be SNOMED, if the values in those value sets are all SNOMED codes, but they're just captured within an HL7 value set, typically what USCDI will do is it will identify the commonality, which may well be SNOMED. Because USCDI is amongst other things, at a core exchange standards agnostic.
Yeah, well, I think you'll find the same one in all of the, it is the commonality right now. I'm for the other one as a good code and let it gradually replace it. But if it does it as a sudden thing, I don't think that'll be healthy. Of course, the other thing to remember too is that the specimen is typically embedded for common test in the name itself, serum glucose, and isn't required for the specimen.
We discussed that.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I wanted to raise an issue, so my hand is up. and that was in recommendation 24. And I think, Arian, you crafted this one. But when you put in unit of measure and interpretation, and this is laboratory elements, but so I didn't see those. So they're in CLIA, but they're actually not in USCDI.
They are. So interpretation is in USCDI, and unit of measure is noted as either level one or level two.
The recommendation 24
results. So,
okay.
I can go get the as a structural element. The only thing that was not mentioned in level two or level three was reference ranges, which was obviously a miss by somebody because that is in CLIA.
Right, and we added that as the bottom sub bullet there.
One, yeah. So if you just give me a moment, I can go find the sources.
Okay, but you think it's reasonable for us to include those two?
Yes.
Could I comment? I checked with one of the big labs. They said they would like to test the unique identifier. But I still think it'd be a good idea to talk to the laboratory association to see how easy it would be to use. But anyway, it's on the positive side.
So test interpretation is in level one. And then if you go under result value in level two, there are recommendations to might be somewhere else. There is it's another one which under result value where there's recommendations to add UOM.
So if interpretation is in level one, I think it's out of scope for us to suggest it for inclusion in version three.
I thought we were including stuff from level one, level two.
Just, I think we're only allowed to, if you go back to our charges, our charge is to look at items in level two that were left out of draft version three. So we have repeatedly declared out of scope things that are at comment level one.
Fair enough.
So could you just clarify, is one comes before two, but I guess it doesn't.
One is less mature than two. Okay. It all depends on whether you're talking about levels or versions. So version one came before version two, but level one is less mature than level two. So I think we need to take out interpretation. If we want to put it at the bottom as a list of things that we're recommending that ONC work with stakeholders to see if and when interpretation can be added, that I think that's fine.
We can highlight it. Getting it in there though anyway.
Yeah, so UOM is noted as an APHL. UOM coded as UCOM is noted as an APHL comment as a comment to V3 under the result. And so, yeah, and so interpretation is in level one. So we should move it to the section where interpretation and reference range are in the, you know, ONC should consider for future revisions to better align with CLIA.
Which you could just add it right in that sentence, reference mm-hmm. range right there and interpretation. Yes, and we all support it.
No, I got you. We got to go with the process.
Play by our own rules.
My mistake for misunderstanding the underlying process we were following.
And Hung, why don't you chime in?
Oh, I think one recommendation that was missed was that we also specified adding SNOMED CT as an applicable standard for qualitative results.
If that was in the spreadsheet.
So we could do that in the second to last bullet. Recommend that USCD IV3 specify SNOMED CT as an applicable vocabulary standard for specimen type and qualitative results.
Yeah.
So SNOMED, not and qualitative results, specimen type for qualitative, and result values qualitative.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
And since result values is already part of USCDI, we'll list it first.
That was actually explicitly spelled out in a generation ago. I mean, 2 years ago, in one of the.
Yes, right, Clem. We because of the numerous applicable standards depending on the result type, we decided not to add all of them. So LOINC, SNOMED, UCOM are all. Reasonable applicable standards depending on the result type. So because there were so many, we added none.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, it is in there. It is in there. It is recommendation 18.
I thought I remember seeing it.
Thank you, Al.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so we could take potentially shorten the list by taking it out of 18 and putting it down with its brethren and sistren below.
As everybody knows, you measure the complexity of a set of recommendations by the number of underlying recommendations or by the number of pages of the resulting Federal Register submission.
Oh, this doesn't need to be. So this probably belongs in the first section.
Up above.
My suggestion.
Good point. Yes.
And it's already in there, but.
Yeah, it is duplicative.
It's not duplicative if we just refer to it for specimen type, because specimen type is
it's duplicative because under specimen type we also recommend SNOMED CT as the code system. That is 10. Recommendation 10.
And SNOMED for specimen type.
Yeah, so if you go up to recommendation 10, it's already there.
So let's collapse 10 and 18 into one.
Okay.
10 is where we say include specimen type. So we have a recommendation.
Shorter and shorter. I love it.
Short is good. Brevity is the soul of wit.
Yes.
That's funny, Stephen, and well said. All right. Combine this two. Okay.
So David McCallie made a comment. Are there any systems that don't include interpretation? I don't think that's
there really are no systems that don't include interpretation. There are no systems that don't include reference range.
So why is it in level one? Who knows? So
why is it in level one and not in level two? I do not understand. I think it was because it dawned on people very late that people just assumed it was there and it's not there. And so it's always a surprise to people that it's not there.
So Arian, the HL7 fire spec and the V2 spec is also specified by ANCA as required. And those data elements are in those specs.
This is my underlying point.
Right.
This is my underlying point. It's the same issue for medication. My underlying point is the NCPDB script that's already a certification guide includes all the detail around medication that you would ever need. And so the work is basically to realign these classes and their data elements with the actual certification criteria. We also have to follow the mechanisms that were laid out for level one, level two, and it's a little bit of a mess right now.
So if you scroll down to the bottom of page 12, we captured these concepts in additional work group recommendations, which are sort of, and we've done this historically in prior task forces, that we have to address our charges and the tasks that we were given. And then we take the liberty of adding to that with some additional recommendations. So this is where those are. And Al does have this question about LOINC vital sign qualifiers, which I think Clem came from you. So this is where we're essentially asking ONC to extend our charge and our support so that we could do a third task in anticipation of the version 4 work.
If helpful, Stephen, I recall this idea coming up around the average blood pressure discussion, but maybe we broadened it as well. So just that's a memory if helpful.
Yeah, I think as Arian clarified earlier that the average blood pressure was one where we said, you know, we think it's probably a good idea and ONC should go work on that as opposed to asking us to work on Clem?
Sure. Just in terms of the qualifier, I just want to explain what's meant by that. Those are things like body position when you're doing a vital sign, standing or sitting, things like the cuff size, you know, I don't know what they are, 10 centimeters, 20 centimeters, things like there's four or five of them that apply to a lot of vital signs, and they're available and we proposed them in the past, but I think it would be nice that clinical systems could be more specific if they wanted to be, but wouldn't be obliged to be.
Yeah, and I think that comes through in this recommendation. I'll just say, speaking as a clinician, I'd find this to be more valuable as an addition to the core data for interoperability than calculated averages, but that's just one man's opinion.
As a person who's had many a blood pressure reading taken walking out of the lobby into the blood pressure cuff, interpretation of blood pressure readings is out of an EHR is seems like a little bit of a mystery. I guess nobody cares if it's normal.
So how many cuffs do you now own?
And then there's the whole issue of finger pressures, wrist pressures, and arm pressures, right?
Right, yeah, where it's taken. That's one of the qualifiers.
Exactly. Okay. Have we addressed all of the comments that were in the distributed document? I think there was one, Arian, with your name on it in recommendation 13. Did that get taken care of?
I don't believe so. So the comment that I had is that we make specific, we recommend the following level two data elements to capture important patient generated health data be added. And in all of these cases, these can be both clinical and patient observations. I guess family health history is always elicited through interview and assessment.
Actually, not always. Yeah. There's currently functionality that allows one to link multiple medical records, right?
There you go. So in all these cases, then let me amend this. In all these cases, there are objective sources as well as patient self-reported sources for this information. And I don't think we're saying that allergies, you know, substance allergies can never be clinically observed, or date of onset of a problem can never be clinically observed.
Now, should this really become a
not making that statement?
Should this be a sub bullet under recommendation 12 above, having to do with author? That is to say, that author is particularly relevant for these data classes.
So I was a little confused as to whether which of these are in USCDI V3. And are we making recommendations that we include that they be patient generated, or we're including that we're recommending they be included in USCDI. And then for these that are included, we're also making the recommendation consistent with our other recommendations that can be clinically observed or patient generated.
None of the data elements in 13 are in USCDI draft B3 or draft any.
Cool.
They're all level two elements.
Got it. So I think what we're recommending is they be included in USCDI, and we're also recommending that consistent with our other recommendations that we include both clinical observation and patient generated health data as sources.
Agree. This is Mark.
And I don't personally think that the EG square brackets texts are necessary. I think.
Yes, that's right.
You could ditch those.
So I just wanted some clarity about how to phrase. I personally don't think that these five listed are clinical observations other than the allergies as a diagnosis of an event.
Date of onset of a problem is a clinical observation. If it happens, if it happens in a clinical setting.
It happens in front of the doctor, but how often did that
a lot.
I don't think that's the...
It happens. Anaphylaxis happens in front of the doctor all the time.
You're speaking of, you know, exactly. I've been in the hospital and I've had plenty of problem that has been clinically observed.
Well, for clarification,
so the suggestion is to scope the recommendation to define these data elements as both clinical observations and patient reported.
That's right. And to Stephen's point, family health history, if I link via familial status, can be a direct a direct read off of the chart as opposed to patient self reported.
Well, just to clarify,
the original source of health history is always patient reported.
In FHIR, observations have a special definition, and the date of onset would be an attribute of the problems resource, not the observation resource. Just for the record.
I think the point in all of this, and to David's comment, is that we, for any of these, we want to be able to be clear through the provenance metadata or some other means whether the data was reported or observed. Or as Arian said, you know, imported from another source. All right. Well, this ended up taking the time allotted. I sort of anticipated we might go through this a little more quickly. There are a lot of people on the call who've been very quiet. Anybody else have any specific thoughts or observations that they'd like to share?
And maybe just to close out of this, I think we've captured all of the work group comments. I think we're also going to commit to doing a secondary last pass to make sure that everything in the spreadsheet has been is addressed in the recommendations letter itself. But this is by matter of last call. Because we have the majority of the time on the 13th.
Yes, that is to say, if for the presentation to HITAC, Arian and I will be ringmasters of a lively conversation, I'm sure. And all of you who are on HITAC, please come with bells and whistles and give your support. And those of you who are members of the public or members of this work group but not on HITAC, please attend. And I think there's public chat at HITAC too these days, right? So I think you can root for things in the public chat there as well. Just trying to keep up with the chat here. Great. All right. We like praise. And Al and Mike in particular, thank you guys for all of your support that you've been giving to this process. And we obviously couldn't do this without your help and the help of the entire ONC team to help us bring these together.
Indeed.
It's a woohoo moment.
All right. Shall we celebrate for a nanosecond and then move on to thinking about our second charge relative to the ISA portion?
I think, Al, you were going to introduce this. Just a quick reminder, our charge is to identify opportunities to update the ISA, the ONC's Interoperability Standards Advisory, to address priority uses of health IT, and including related standards and implementation specifications. So a number of items have come up in our discussions thus far that people have wanted to bring forward. This is our chance. So go ahead and take us through this, Al.
But this is just a real quick introduction to the Interoperability Standards Advisory. It's been around now for 8 years, and every year we make updates to it to identify what really is a broad compendium of standards in health IT, and that's not just vocabulary standards, which is primarily the focus of USCDI, but also things that identify standards around content and structure of data. So that could be how to put individual terminology into a structure of, say, like a report or an exchange package. There are services that can be that have standards associated with them, like how to so security protocols and things like that that are defined by certain standards, but don't identify individual terminologies. The ISA combines not only the standards that are required in certain things like certification and in particular USCDI, it's not just about what the requirements are going to be, which is the focus of USCDI and CERT. The flexibility that the ISA allows is significant, especially compared to anything in certification or in particular with USCDI. The ability to add something to this compendium is probably the strongest part of the ISA. We go through a process every year to update the ISA. We just recently published, actually recently now, it's been 3-4 months, the reference edition. And the reference edition really is just a point in time, a fixed document that is the update as of the time of publication. But that doesn't change the fact that the ISA is a living, breathing thing. It can change in a matter of minutes, in order, if somebody in the middle of the year at any time identifies a new standard or identifies an old standard that addresses a particular problem, a particular what we call interoperability needs, then those changes can be made immediately. And so then it becomes there for the public to review, to comment on, and to maybe even recommend changes or improvements to those particular interoperability standards. And so the ISA can be used in a lot of different ways. It can be used as a it can actually be used as a reference. There are some examples of where different agencies or entities have said, not because it's in certification or not because it's in USCDI, but because it's in the ISA, that folks that want to take advantage of whatever benefits that entity points to, they have to use the standards that are listed in the ISA. So it becomes a little bit of a lever to promote the use of some of these standards that are different, that made those levers may be different than the regulatory levers that USCDI and certification offer. And so it's for areas that are underdeveloped, this work group can make recommendations to changes. And I was not around for the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force last year or the year before. So I can't say, I'm not as familiar with all of the things that were done to feed this, to offer up the standards priorities from last year. But I do know that the ISA, you know, stands ready to receive these changes and can be acted on very quickly without a long implementation timeline that USCDI and certification have. Well,
yeah, so David and I were the co-chairs of the ISP, Interoperability Standards Priority Task Force. The other thing I'd add is that the ISA, so we've got USCDI that's certification relative to data. There are certification criteria that name standards and implementation guidance, and the ISA would be the prospective place to pull new certification criteria relative to interoperability. Not only is it a holding ground for the state of the art relative to pilots and implementations, it's also the place where standards and interoperability specifications and implementation guidance can be matured for future certification associated with those elements as well. And then in terms of areas of focus, I think we walked in with some additional SDOH standards. We contemplated whether we should take on expansion of race, ethnicity, vocabulary subsets. So as a reminder, the current USCDI names the CDC race, ethnicity, vocabulary list, which is extensive. And then a subset list, which maps to the OMB classification, which is tiny. There may be some need for something intermediate. There's a tremendous amount of work that's going on with SHIELD. And so we really wanted to contemplate taking on the SHIELD work and looking at whether there is additions that we can recommend to the ISP. There is, I think, a pretty obvious set of fixes to the ISP associated with evolution in ECR. And then in the previous work group, we named additional future work is warranted that we didn't have time to get into on care plans, chronic disease management, data sharing between federal and commercial entities, portal data aggregation across multiple portals, occupation and location of work, which I think we did actually take up here in the in USCDI, which I think is useful. Data exchange formats for price transparency and associated standards. And then I think we've heard from a number of people on the work group as well as externally that there's work going on in standards that enable patient use of HIPAA rights to self-correction that we might want to contemplate.
So with that, we're going to need to cut to public comment. I do want to point out, though, to everyone that we really have 9 working meetings between now and when we need to finalize our recommendations regarding the ISA. So we do have some time, but it will fly by quickly. Let's cut to public comment, and then I've got a few more points to make.
All right, thank you. And I just want to note that if you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. And if you happen to be on the phone only, press *9 to raise your hand. And once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for a moment to see if anyone raises their hand.
I see a hand up.
We have Debbie Willis. Please go ahead for 3 minutes.
Hi. I don't think I'll need 3 minutes. I just want to ask really logistically how to move forward in getting the patient request for corrections to become part of standards. There's so many errors in charts, and I'm a co-chair of the patient empowerment work group and a co-lead on the project patient request for corrections. And we're now going to go to ballot in May, but it's really important that we move this forward to actually get implemented and getting it kind of in front and noticed in the standards is really critical. So are there recommendations on what we should do? And are y'all looking into this? Is there anything we could do to help?
Yeah, I can respond quickly, just saying that, you know, we've got Grace as a great voice on this work group, as well as the public comment process. Certainly anybody can jump on to the ISA and make put input there, but I don't think there's any question that we will be addressing this. We, as we have in the USCDI phase of our work, we have the opportunity to hold hearings, to invite subject matter experts, et cetera. I anticipate this may be one of those situations where we will do that. And probably at our meeting next week, we will talk about sort of what are the areas that warrant that kind of more of a laser focus. It's going to happen.
Just to repeat, yeah, we will. Our first activity will be to prioritize the list of things we'll narrow down on, and this is clearly part of the set that we will contemplate and consider.
Wonderful. And I don't see any other public comment hands up, but we'll still watch for those if people have other ideas. Arian and David did a great job managing this process last cycle. I had the opportunity with Ken Kawamoto to co-chair the group for, I think, the 2 cycles before that. So we have a lot of experience working through this. We used a methodology a couple of years back of a spreadsheet similar to what we've been through with USCDI, and I sent that to the ONC team where we can collect ideas as much as we have before. And I think that we will try to get that up and available to all of you in the next day or two so that these sorts of specific suggestions can be captured much as we did in the USCDI portion and then work through it from there. Christina?
Yeah, I know we're at time here, so I'll just be really quick. I see that the recommendations that we could, or the focus areas, are very specific. I think one thing we should also look at is the connection to USCDI. So ISA is a really important document, and I think there's opportunities for ISA to kind of map to USCDI. USCDI lets us see kind of what's coming up and what's being considered for USCDI, but there is a lot of work happening that is not being identified in USCDI. So I will put together a thought and send it to both of you for looking at that area. Sorry, I was trying to be really quick on that.
Fantastic. And I think that's the reason that ONC wanted to combine these 2 work groups, because there's obvious points of connection.
And that brings us to the top of the hour. Thank you, everyone, for your time and attention. We will see you next week, and we hope that you will also join us at the HITECH meeting subsequently.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Thank you all.